More than $1 trillion in sequestration-related cuts could put national security at risk. That is what the Defense Department is arguing in their list of sequestration cuts. The Pentagon's report describes what DOD would look like if sequestration continues past fiscal 2015. Russell Rumbaugh is Director of Budgeting for Foreign Affairs and Defense and Senior Associate at the Stimson Center, and my guest on this portion of Pentagon Solutions today, sponsored by Augusta Westland. Russell, as I read through this, I thought of two things. I thought this could either be a serious attempt at the Pentagon to tell the story of what would happen if sequestration returns after the bipartisan budget agreement expires, or this could be kind of a spooky scare job that they're trying to give Congress to say, hey, these are the things that are going to go away. You know, the typical Washington Monument type thing that we see in Washington. Do you have a sense of which one of those this might be, or could it be a little bit of both?
Francis, thanks for having me on. And the key word you used is serious. This is serious. This is not just a page of talking points. Rather, this is 36 pages of really fine detail and specific numbers at what the defense budget looks like at high levels. Not surprisingly, that's not something that's just whipped up in the press shop. That's something that takes the whole building to churn through. So this has been a serious effort to look at what these two levels are. Now, to get to your specific point, what's really interesting is early on they provide a list. The things that will happen if they don't get the number the numbers they've asked for, the cuts, the scare tactics, but then they also have a promise of if you do give us more, we'll manage to not cut these things too. The things we would more normally associate with the Washington Monument strategy, something like aircraft carriers and Army force structure. So serious is absolutely the word, and this is a rare peek into the alternatives that's gone on inside the Pentagon.
I was struck, Russell, by how specific this was and by how many sacred cows they just laid right out on the table. Stars and Stripes reports, according to the report's findings, sequestration level funding for fiscal 2015 to 19 would result in reduction of a squadron of F-35s, elimination of the fleet of KC-10 tankers. That's an elimination of an entire fleet of one program there. Reduction of operational surface combatant ships by 7 in 2019. And it goes on and on and on, and we have a link at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. But, I mean, the level of detail, I think, is what supports the point that you just made, that this wasn't something that somebody just threw together for talking points. This really came from deep inside the policy shop.
That's absolutely right. I would take issue with your point about sacred cows. Most of this list are not sacred cows. We know the Air Force doesn't want Predators. They were already going to get rid of them. We know they've always been nervous about the Global Hawk. And the eliminate the Reaper, they've already said we're not going to buy the Reaper drones, as many as we'd promised Secretary Gates. This is just another step down from that. On the Navy's, that certainly retiring the entire KC-10 fleet is a little bit surprising. But we also saw that trial balloon come up last summer. The Navy ships seem like they're closer to home, but of course that's also an explicit trade-off to make sure the Navy can buy its later ships. Where we start getting into the sacred cows are these promised ones. And again, we start with the aircraft carrier. What's interesting is it's already baked into the budget that they're going to not keep the 11th carrier come FY16. Of course, that's not quite a sacred cow because what the Navy's doing is trading off a current carrier for a future carrier. So that probably weighs more for the Navy. Nevertheless, this is a real peek into actual planning.
They address also, Russell, the troop levels, and these numbers all get at the levels that the leaders of the various branches have said, we really don't want to be in that situation. General Campbell was on my program not too long ago talking about how bad a 420,000 soldier level would be for the Army, but that's the level that's in this report. National Guard and Reserves falling to 315 and 185,000 apiece. The Marine Corps shrinking to 175, and General Amos has said that's not the direction that he would like to see the Marine Corps go. So that's what, I guess, led me to the first part of my first question, which is, how much of this is to spook people and say, we're not kidding, this could get really bad and some things could happen that you, Mr. and Mrs. Member of Congress, really don't want to happen?
It absolutely is an effort to put flesh on these bones of, really, let's not accept sequester. even though this level of detail shows the Pentagon's getting ready to accept this level of sequester, which, of course, all the observers the last few years have said, why aren't you planning? Why aren't you planning? Well, here's the plan, and here's what it looks like. That means we're going to see a signal from Congress that says, yep, we knew what we were getting into, and we're still signing up for it. This is no longer a finger pointing in multiple directions. The DOD has made really clear Congress knows what they're buying if they don't overturn sequester.
The part of this that is fascinating to me, Russell, is that this is not happening in a vacuum. You know, we're looking at a world where Russia and China in particular are extremely aggressive about ramping up the amount of spending that they're doing. Now, they're not coming anywhere near to what we're spending anytime soon. But they also are making very clear and very public the efforts that they're making to compete with the United States military in at least in certain sectors or in certain platforms. Is that correct? Is that fair for me to say?
Well, it's still not quite compete. It's contest.
Okay,
it isn't
yes.
quite the same
Agreed.
Thing as compete. And, you know, I think there's two important points to make to that. Everybody is aware of the irony that this major planning effort of both the budget and the Quadrennial Defense Review, the strategy document this budget is based on, came out days before we had the crisis in Crimea and now eastern Ukraine. Certainly an interesting question is what's the talking points look like if that had happened 6 months ago. That said, nothing about this, including the Budget Control Act, underpins the logic of the money. None of that's going to be binding if there's a direct conflict with Russia. And who your listeners more than most will appreciate, there's another side to this context, which is this isn't just a debate about defense spending in government. It's a debate about all government spending.
The element of this that I think of when you talk about Crimea and eastern Ukraine is then what does this mean in the context of our partnerships in Asia with Japan? Japan also is starting to ramp up military spending and buy things that they haven't bought for many, many decades. But on the other side of the world, in Europe, our allies in NATO, many of them fiscally are in the same situation or worse than we are, and thus are in the same situation as we are as far as what they're doing with their defense budgets. What's the implication there for overall national security? And are you maybe a little surprised that there wasn't more emphasis on the global context of this, of where we stand in this document?
That there isn't an explicit threat of if you don't provide sequester, we're going to lose to Russia.
No, that's not what I expected to see. But I guess I was a little surprised that I didn't even see much of an allusion to the fact that we have allies, but our allies in many cases are in the same situation that we're in, and yet we have these treaty responsibilities that we may be called on to fulfill.
Well, of course, as you alluded to when you start, the U.S. is spending dramatically more than Russia by itself. If it gets to take the next dozen powerful, militarily powerful countries in the world, which are its European allies, who may not be spending as much as we want and may not have spent as much as they have in the past, but are still some of the most premier militaries in the world, and we get to do that as a group, that's a real powerful military force. And so we're still a long way away from outcomes on the battlefield being affected by these big budget cuts and budget conversation we're having in the Beltway.
Okay, the other item that I detected as I went down through this list of things that they would lop off in the case of sequestration returning is that they appeared to go for big dollars up front, which is completely contrary to what everybody, no matter where they are on the ideological spectrum or the size of the Pentagon spectrum, says is a really bad way to do strategy. And I wonder if there's some kind of hidden or implicit message there, too.
Well, I think you could even look at this in a little more positive light, right? If you look at what the proposed budget is, what the budget that's going to meet the cash for FY15 and that lays in the next few years, the two clear priorities are, first of all, the readiness funding, the operations and maintenance, the money that goes into keeping everything ready today. That is the most favored account throughout the entire budget. The second most favorite account is the research and development, which, as you say, is the one most people associate with ensuring our future success down the line. When we look at what the sequester scenario is, and now with this document, we can look at the Pentagon's plan both in the present and at the lower levels. What happens is instead of O&M being plussed up, it stays flat. Instead of our research and development being plussed up, it stays flat. In both cases, military personnel and procurement costs were going down under the original budget, and they'll go down more under the BCA. But I think you still see a prioritization, either under the president's proposed budget or under sequester level, a prioritization of that stuff that matters both for today and for the future.
One final thought. I know sequester is supposed to be a salami slice and it's X percent off of everything. But I wonder, given that we now have this document that looks amazingly to me like kind of a reverse budget request, if it's possible that if the numbers stay the way they are, we might see debate and discussion and hearings and so on off of this document the same way we see them in the Armed Services Committees and the Appropriations Committees every year.
Absolutely, Francis. We've backed ourselves into a weird corner with using terms. Right now we're using sequester to mean two separate things. In one, we mean the levels at the levels written into law right now, the Budget Control Act as amended levels, and we call those sequestration levels because it's less than what the president requested. But that's different from the mechanism called sequester that's the salami slice. So even if the levels stay down, stay at the lower levels, DOD nor anybody else has to salami slice. They can move funding around strategically. And you see that in this document. There is a prioritization. There is a prioritization to the readiness funding. There is a prioritization to research and development. So this is no longer a question of salami slice. It's a question of how much money overall.
Russell, your insight's always great, and I appreciate having you on the program. Thanks for your time today.
Thanks for your time, and good luck to your listeners.
Russell Rumbaugh is Director of Budgeting for Foreign Affairs and Defense and Senior Associate at the Stimson Center. And my guest on Pentagon Solutions today, this portion sponsored by Augusta Westland. You can read about DOD's sequestration report and hear my conversation with Russell later this afternoon at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth.